I'm going to go ahead and start. The noise level's okay. I actually can't see the chat, so if anyone's watching it or anything like that, and someone says something, just shout it out. I hate long, boring presentations, and so we will get out early because one of the things I figure is like the reason people come to these things is there's possibly something they're thinking about. So why don't we talk about that at the end rather than me presenting a whole bunch of stuff? And as the slide title says, this is about updating reporting large record sets. And it's not going to have anything earth-shattering. It's these small, non-intuitive things that really makes life a lot easier and harder. There's going to be a couple dimensions to this. Like, see if I can get this. There we go. I'm going to be talking about both API and non-API methods. Even if you feel very comfortable with the API, I might be providing some information that will be helpful. If you're an API user, you'll be interested in the non-API methods because sometimes there's a better way. And obviously, if you don't use the API, the non-API methods will be interesting, hopefully. But I'm going to keep things fairly generic because there are so many different ways that people use things. There's so many different tools. There's so many different needs that if we try to enumerate all this stuff, we'll go out of our minds in the detail. But one of the recurring themes I'm going to have over the over this presentation is do things the easy way. Do not try to find the one ring to rule them all when it comes to doing reporting. Reporting in large updates. There are some non-intuitive uses of data import which work better than bulk edit, better than even the sync APIs, a lot faster, a lot easier. And we'll talk about that. And then data export and lists, depending on what you're, I mean, everything depends on what you're doing. And then, of course, the capabilities within Folio are constantly expanding. And so sometimes, either using functionality even in the GUI or automating part of that or being outside that, all of those things can be useful. I have a couple links to some tools. The Folio data import is basically some Python tools. You do not need to know how to use Python in order to use them. The reason I mention them is because they're very flexible and very intelligent about how they perform certain updates. We're going to talk about some of the types of problems that you'll run into, like if you're updating a million item records, and that's tool set's pretty useful. And then we have some shell utilities. The shell utilities are they're very useful, but they also presume that you know exactly what you're doing, so you'll have to pay a little bit more attention. But they're actually really, really good for harvesting like pretty much anything you need, doing mass updates and the like. Non-API methods first. Okay, so I'm not going to walk through everything. Yes, there are solid bulk edit and list stuff. The you create sets and there's some criteria options. They're limited, but thankfully they're limited to things that people frequently need. And then they're going to be expanding, but mostly it's surrounds a certain number of user connected things, user connected and inventory. And then you can pick things out and blah, blah, blah. It, you know, flattens everything out. You get it. And so if you haven't been using it, you should definitely check it out. What's much more interesting is using data import for updating items. For example, one of the things that was handed to me actually last night is I got sent a list of, you know, hundreds of thousands of barcodes and notes, you know, that institution, you know, they forgot to send it during migration. It would have been great, but and so now they're in Folio, and so they've been live for a long time. Now that would should sound like a that might sound like a big pain in the neck, but the reality is this problem is only going to take a few minutes to solve. And so what you basically so it's much faster than bulk edit. You can, it's much faster than bulk edit. You can drop like hundreds of thousands, half a million, in one operation, no problem. And it provides logs and all that kind of stuff. And so all it requires you to do is create a simple MARC record. And in this case, since there's going to be a note and it's going to be attached to something, I'm going to create a data import profile where it matches on the barcode. So I'll convert this delimited list into a series of MARC records, run it through, boom, done. I mean, you can also do that through bulk API things, and we'll talk about how that could also be done because sometimes that's necessary. But in this particular case, this is going to be a lot easier because you don't have to deal with optimistic locking. You don't have to deal with, because a node is an entity and it has properties because it has node types and visibility to staff and all that kind of stuff. And that way, there's actually no coding or anything like that. So it's real easy. And so, like in a case like that, I mean, this is not a node example, but what you do is you say it's a MARC bibliographic record, even though it's an item, and you actually do not want a bibliographic record. These records, if you're updating them all the same, it's only going to have one field in it, or only needs one field. And in this case, since I want to put a value in there, it's going to have only two fields in here. And so I say, okay, let's match up on barcode. The barcode will be in the 001. That's going to be in my match profile. And then in this particular case, I'll stuck it in a 980A or something like that for some item identifier. And that's all you have to do. It's and then like you can set everything. You can match on well, the data import profiles are misleading in that it must be a unique match. Like if you look in the list, you can match on bizarre things like copy number, but if like copy number two is not a unique value in your system, I don't recommend doing that. You're as a practical matter, maybe stick with barcode, UUID, HRID, something like that. Just like so, yeah. So don't try to do it on based on stat code or location or something like that, and think you can do it. It just doesn't work that way. But to give you, this is an example of how simple the MARC record is. It's literally something like this. Oh, and in this particular example, since there's only one field in it, you'd be presuming that, oh, we're going to do something with all of these records, like, I don't know, stick them in a different location or change their status or something like that. But the main things to know is when you're using data import to update holdings or items, send only one record per update, like one record at a time. So, for example, if the way you generated your list was you output a bunch of bibs with embedded items, i.e., you could have one item in there, you could have 10, you cannot inhale the 10 items that are in there. You need to create one record for each one because, I mean, one thing would say, well, how come I can't just load a delimited list instead of this MARC conversion thing? And I think it's because they didn't anticipate it would be used in this way, but it actually works really well. And the other thing that I like about it is you're not testing or anything like that because who wants to, I mean, if I'm going to put a value in, the reason I want to put it in there is because I want to put it in there. I don't want to, it's like, are you sure? It's like, yes, I'm sure. Why else would I would do that? But one per record, and also make sure that everything's unique. You will also need to know what it expects because data import has improved a great deal because it used to be it would allow you to put things in reference data that were not legit, which can cause you like massive headaches in with the way it could, like muck up discovery or the UI and stuff like that. So, and it's gotten a lot more intelligent about just rejecting the record rather than letting you put something in that will mess you up. But what I would recommend when you first start doing this, test it with one or two, make sure it works. But that's all there is to it. So just, yeah, convert your text to MARC, pop it in, and ignore everything they say about limits, drop a half million with confidence, no big deal. Let's see. Gotchas. Oh, yeah, I already did that. Okay. The API methods. One of the things I've noticed in the wild when I see other people doing API work is when they're working with inventory, they tend to use the inventory endpoints. There's a lot of good reasons to do that. One is that it often combines information that you want. For example, you'll have your instance holdings and items together, and people are often thinking about those things. It resolves reference data in many cases. And then the third reason is, and we encourage this, is like when you're learning the API, one great way to figure stuff out is rather than going through tons and tons of documentation is to just see what Folio is doing and do that. It's, a lot easier. But the problem is the UI is designed for like, like small transactions. You're only pulling in, not so many records at a time. And so if you need to download millions of records, it actually works rather poorly, and you don't want it to be doing, it's actually inefficient about doing it. So like I never use business logic APIs except for when I have to, because they're because it's a lot faster. The second, and I'm going to return to this point because it's one of these non-intuitive things, and some of you have seen this on the Slack. Always, always, always limit and sort by UUID, and do not waste your time with offsets. That is a for large sets, because they'll say, "Oh, you can just do offsets." No, offsets are useless. What happens is when your record sets gets big, you are going to see linear degradation in the response time as you get higher. And so if you're only downloading like tens of thousands or 100,000, it's going to be fine. But as you get higher and higher, you're going to see longer and longer time to start getting timeouts. And if you, once your collection gets to a certain size, it's actually useless and the job will fail. So what you do instead is you simply sort by UUID, your results. Not every single kind of record can be. It's like, for example, I think organizations can't, but there's, you don't, the most organizations I've ever dealt with is less than 100,000. So, but in general, you can sort by UUID. It's efficient, and also limit your search by the highest UUID you retrieved in the last set. And that way, as you go even into very large sets, it will you will not see this degradation. And so that will, downloading millions of records is actually quite fast. And as a matter of fact, I mean, I guess I didn't say what I do for work. I work for EBSCO. I'm a implementation consultant. And so aside from helping people migrate to Folio, if someone has a problem with Folio, I will sometimes get pinged on support. But one of the fun facts is that there is no real secret sauce. What we use for information is the same stuff you see on the open web. The tools that we put out there, those are the ones we use to do the actual work. That's the ones we use the actual repair. There's this, this stuff. It's not like we have some secret backdoor that we can do stuff. This stuff works. The third point. Okay, yeah, sure.
Question. Oh yeah, let's pass this mic around.
So it's a question from chat, which now I just lost. For these large batch changes, are there any workflows that are involved, such as doing it on a test server first and looking at it, taking a snapshot backup first and looking at it, or way to pull a history of the change within Folio and roll back to a past version of the modified records?
No need to make it that complicated. The easy way to do that, there's the easiest way to do that is, in order to change a record, you must pull it, because you have to have the at least the version and all that kind of stuff. Impossible to modify otherwise. Well, the very act of pulling the record so you can modify it, now you have a copy of it, so that if you if it somehow fails, the only thing you have to do is put back the copy that you just had. So like, let's suppose I download everything and I got the directions all wrong. Oh, they, dang, I messed up a million records, that kind of thing. All I have to do is update the version, because with the optimistic locking, it's going to lock it out, put it back. This is even for, like, even if you messed up a million records, this is not going to take long at all. So I'm going to say something about test servers. Don't waste your time with them. The reason I say that is for a couple reasons. One is that the reference data in your Folio installation, your reference data is everything. And if you have more than one installation, there is no way that they're going to be exactly the same. And so that something works on test does not mean that it will work in production. That it doesn't work in production doesn't mean it won't work on test. And I just mentioned one, you know, like really easy way to recover a mistake. We can do some pretty cool things when it comes to, we have had, and I don't suggest this, if you like totally blow up your database, like let's suppose you sent you deleted all your data, and it has been done before. If that happens, we back up continuously, note the time, call us up immediately, and we can restore it. It's been done. You will not incur additional charges or anything like that. We might laugh about it and the background and all that kind of stuff, and then we know that you will not make that mistake again. In terms of like protecting yourself, all you have to do is copy the data as you're reading it, as a byproduct of your process. And that way, if you find out that you did something that didn't work, you can always restore that. And then there's ways also of doing partial stitching. Actually, the data import tools that I mentioned, had the link to earlier, it actually is really good about doing like partial stitching. You don't have to know how to do you don't have to know the programming part to only fix parts of the record without overwriting. Yeah, there's a lot of flexibility there. Good question though.
There's a clarifying question. I'm assuming from the same person. So your versioning workflow is in a convention for keeping the files organized and labeled on your desktop or area of server that is not part of the application.
Well, yeah. The way I would think of it is like, you know, when you're driving down the highway, there's that line there, 2 feet on the wrong side of the line, no good. When you're swinging big tools around, definitely pay attention to what you're doing. But it actually is quite safe if you, the things that are most likely to get people in trouble are making assumptions about their data that aren't true. It's what you don't know that's going to bite you in the butt. And so, one thing that I would caution people about is, since everything in Folio is in JSON and people will put things in other environments and treat it like strings, watch out for things like escaping quotes, funny characters, and stuff like that. That's the kind of thing that you can introduce. You can introduce corruption and all kinds of headaches. Or if you pattern matching and you make assumptions about how the patterns in your loose regexes are a great way to cause yourself massive headaches, because if you somehow started like monkeying around something that modified, you know, overlapped with, you thought you were changing location codes, but you were sloppy and didn't actually limit it to the location area. Oh yeah. And you got part of a UUID type of thing. You know, you really definitely need to think about how you're doing things. But if you keep things to the, you know, like things, keep things to the side, let's take our million record mess up analogy a little bit further. And let's also say that, oh, everything seemed fine. And it wasn't until 3 weeks later, you know, when you've got all these transactions going and people have been adding notes and stuff like that, that we discover what's going on. You still have the original values. And so what you'd need to do is you'd have to have some way of thinking about what would be updated, and you can just stitch that. Basically, you can stitch in the differences and put it back. So there's it's actually the ability to recover from mistake is actually very good. And one thing I would say in general that, no, trust yourself. You are, it doesn't mean you'll never make mistakes. It doesn't mean that you won't cause yourself some headaches, but you'll come out enough ahead that you're going to spend less time, you know, remedying mistakes than you would like kneecapping yourself so you couldn't work in first place. Because that causes its own pain in the neck. But good questions. I'm still going on this. Okay, Folio Data Import is handy for that. These inventory sync endpoints, those are, and I'm going to talk about some limitations of those. They're much faster than using individual API replacements. And when I say much faster, we're talking hundreds of times faster. So like if you want to modify 1 million records, it will, they'll do that really fast. However, there are some catches, like if there is a single record that can't be updated, the whole batch gets rejected. So you have to account for that. Also, that if you do sync on something that would normally have cause-dependent relationships, so like if you do a sync update on holdings and you're updating the permanent location, the effective location in the attached items will not update when you're... Oh, they fix that?
Yeah.
Okay, they fixed that. Okay. That's good, because that used to be a problem. The next point, you can save yourself an awful lot of time by threading stuff. You know, like why run only one instance when you can, you know, run more? And the number that you can run depends on what type of record it is, what type of operation, a lot of things. But you can drastically increase the speed of things by parallelizing your processes. And so if you're like doing a mass, like let's suppose you're doing a mass harvest, I find that for most record types, I mean, most record types can be pulled very safely in large, heavily loaded tenants. 5 simultaneous threads of 1,000 a piece works just fine. And then, and so that way you get like, I don't know, like 5,000 per second, somewhere close to that. There's going to be some things that, you know, like only can take 100 or kind of weird, like the ERM and, you know, but all those things have a lot smaller endpoints. In general, if you think you need SRS, you probably don't. I know Clay actually was giving me an example last night where you actually do need SRS, but in general, like unless you're doing something weird that involves something that is not part of the MAC record or not doing something like replacing your overlay point. You know, like if you're doing something like that, yes, you're going to have to do that. In general, SRS is complicated to work with. It is slow as heck. And so you want to avoid interact. And also the other thing is you're not actually modifying records. Folio just makes a copy of everything. And so there's a lot of weirdities in it. So just avoid doing that. I was just at a presentation before this on lists, and I realized there's something else I didn't mention, which I will mention in a second. You're going to see a lot of different endpoints, and some of them deal with bulk operations. For most part, ignore them. Because like the mod bulk operations, APIs are really about, what they're really about is supporting like the bulk edit functionality. And yes, you can automate that, but why would you? Because then you'll have the same limitations as bulk edit. And it's complicated. And so the other thing I was thinking about, and this is what I did not put in this presentation, is can you automate like the lists and FQM type stuff? Answer is yes. But why? I mean, if you it just makes things more complicated, because it's designed, it's like automating data export or data import. What you're doing is you're creating, you know, basically jobs and executing them, and then you have to monitor them and figure out file IDs and stuff like that. And so you don't, it makes your config complicated enough that you've lost all the gains. Keep things simple. So just because something says it's designed for bulk doesn't mean that that's the best way to do bulk things when you're automating. Yeah, I think I mentioned all that. Avoid it. Oh, that's there. Here's some of like the other things that's kind of weird is like, since when you're modifying SRS, you're not really modifying it. What you're really doing is you're creating a new record. And then, you know, like you can go through the change manager and stuff like that. And then there's some ID messing with. But so if you go, you know, go down that rabbit hole, expect it to be, do not be surprised when it's, when it seems kind of goofy. I find that SRS operations thread poorly. I forget how many I can do, but it's like, it's low. And in even the individual transactions are disappointingly slow. Couple gotchas to keep in mind, and I've already mentioned these things like optimistic locking. You got to pay attention to your versions. And if you get the version wrong, if you're using a sync endpoint, then you have to, what you'll have to do is you'll have to get the correct version and put it back. And also make sure that if you understand, why the version increased and not overwrite something that you didn't want to. This third point is kind of an annoying thing that I've noticed. In general, in Folio, you'll have some endpoint, a storage endpoint where you pull something by UUID and it gives you a record. And, you know, if you want to make a trivial change, you make your trivial change to the record, you put the record to the same endpoint with the same ID. There are a couple endpoints where that doesn't work because they have some tiny little difference in, I'm trying to remember, it doesn't happen very often, but I occasionally get burned on this. So be aware that that's there. So like, if it doesn't put, just put one record, look at what the error is, and then don't be surprised. Like it'll do the, typically when it's different, it will make you put things inside a container or I forget. It's not a big deal. It's just something to be aware of. We've already talked about whole batches failing if you're like dealing with the sync APIs, sorting and pre-processing so you can have a high degree of confidence that like the bigger the batches are, the higher the possibility that you're going to fail your batch. So you want to make sure that, you know, you have high degree of confidence in what you're doing. Last point on the slide, there are some types of records like ERM, I think organizations is like that. What looks like a record is really a compound object that is, you know, contains a bunch of other things. And so when you want to replace it, you cannot just put the data you want and have it, remember it. You actually have to send delete keys to remove some objects. And I think like, addresses or, I mean, there's a few things like that. So if you find yourself modifying records sometimes where you change the record and the record doesn't seem to change and you get no errors, check the documentation and make sure that you're not dealing with one of those situations. Let's see, creating lists of reports. I think I mentioned data export is actually, I like data export has come a long way in terms of like for anything regular. So even though you're stuck with, you're limited to MARC, you're limited to inventory, just so happens libraries are awfully interested in MARC and inventory. Just use MARC editor, whatever you like to like bust things out. And then of course the reporting capabilities are constantly expanding. This is interesting how I wrote this, because one thing I would say in general is I noticed that when people are reporting, they always try to flatten things into tables. I would recommend against that in general, because the whole point of Folio is it's all in JSON. You have this like nice object structure. And I get that JSON's not the friendliest thing on earth, but if your world is made out of JSON, it is really to your benefit to learn to be a little bit more comfortable with that, because then things will be fast and easy. And if you flatten things only so you can join them again, you wind up with terrible performance and you wind up with headaches that wouldn't even exist if you, the headaches that are much worse than just figuring out the JSON in first place. So I get it that, you know, like it's confusing, all that kind of stuff, but you're going to be working with this stuff all the time. Really, really worth, it's really, really worth, you know, baby steps and all that kind of stuff. You'll be happier if you can find comfort with that, and then you will can flatten when appropriate and whatnot. Let's see what we've got here. It looks like I'm getting, did I go backwards or forwards? There, oh, yeah. I thought I had, oh, I guess I didn't. Okay, so lots of time left. That is good. And I mean, I figured like never want to be hold people late before lunch. And
Kyle, can we go back to the scenario you described where you had like a list of barcodes and you wanted to add note fields to them? So how are you getting, and you said turn them into Mark. Great. How are you turning them into Mark? Are you using Mark Edit? So you just have a list of barcodes and you have your note, right? So I'm trying to think through the workflow of that.
I will tell you what I recommend, and then I will tell you what I personally do because they're not the same thing.
Sure.
Mark Edit has a delimited to a delimited text to Mark translator. And so it will allow you to essentially, you know, you can take a two column file or, you know, however many columns and then say what Mark fields it goes in, and it will build Mark records. I actually write all my own Mark tools because they are faster. Yeah. And so I don't actually use some of the tools I recommend, but I know that they work. The reason I do mine is because it's faster.
No, I get that. I just wanted to make sure that it was something you could do in Mark Edit, because yes. I have never done that in Mark Edit.
No, there is a delimited, I think it's called the delimited text translator or something like that. It has a function that's specifically designed to take delimited text and build it into Mark. But yes.
Perfect.
And I did check to make sure that that exists before. I actually tested it to make sure it actually works, because Mark Edit actually performs pretty well with pretty decent size groups, lists of records. But yeah.
I actually have a clarifying question. Sure. And then another question. So my clarifying question is, you said only do one record at a time.
Yes.
Please explain what you mean by that.
Okay. What it means is that the way data import seems to think, and actually Brooks will probably know about this more than me, but it seems to think of, I think it has a model where it seems that you're targeting a record. When you have an overlay point, it's thinking of what's come in as one record, and then you're generally, if you're doing an overlay, you're replacing one record. So, and you're just like, well, what? That's not clarifying anything so far. But what it means is that you need not a separate entry, but an entirely separate Mark record for everything that you want to overlay. So for example, you know, in the Mark format, you can stick any number of fields in, and a lot of times you're limited by, you know, the logical length limits of Mark. There's no reason why you couldn't put, like, hundreds of items safely, and it would still make sense, because you'd have like barcode, and maybe let's suppose we're updating, sticking in notes as we were in this location, where you have barcode in the like 980A, the note in 980B, and then you'd have a list. And let's also assume that they're all attached to the same serial record. So it's one title with just a lot of items. In order to use data import in this way, you actually need to break this into one Mark record for every barcode. And I realize that this is weird, because I don't think that they anticipated it would be used that way. It actually works really well. And it works fast. And you don't have to test things. And you're like, well, that actually kind of, well, there was a question earlier about, how do you recover you know, how do you recover from error and stuff like that? Well, if you didn't harvest all the stuff in advance, you know, don't make that mistake if you use that method. But also, if you're not modifying, if you're only targeting a specific field, I think that your risk of, you know, like really, I mean, it's always great to be concerned about making mistakes, but do trust yourself. You're just like, you'll be fine. It's like, I mean, and people do make mistakes. It's how you recover from them. Don't make too many of them. Otherwise people won't like you, but it's, but in general, people are more afraid of making mistakes than they should be.
My second question.
Sure.
Is there a way to do any of these types of data import for the editing in non-MARC fields? So if I want to update the statistical code.
Yes, actually, that is a perfect example. And okay. As a matter of fact, I am going to actually, as soon as I get back, I told them I would deliver this presentation first because it is directly relevant to it. In this case, I think that we will be adding tens of millions of statistical codes. So great application for this.
Okay.
And we're not going to need to extract anything. That's the beauty of the whole thing. And so what we'll be doing is, like, you know, you could have, and actually I did this for another client fairly recently where, you know, mapping things on a scale of millions with hundreds of different statistical codes. Now you need to make sure your data is clean and all that kind of stuff. But that's actually a very safe operation to do. What you would do for, let's suppose, a complex, and you could do this with instances, holdings, or items, because all of those things can take statistical codes. So what the easiest way to do it, if you want to map them with a variety of codes as opposed to just one, is you would have your, you know, your list of match point and the statistical code, which you'd be make sure that this is actually one of the advantages of having one record per item. Because one of the things I did test is what happens if you put something that's not legit. Luckily, rejected, which is exactly what you want to happen. And since it's one record at a time, also exactly, it's not going to muck up the whole process. So what you do is you have your columns. Put the match point when whatever you want, 01 or what have you, put the stat code in something else. Your import profile sets the stat code to the code. And for this one, you use the code, not the UUID or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then just feed it in. So yes, it will work great for that. You can assign multiple stat codes. You can assign multiple stat codes. So that's a great application for this mechanism.
And where will I find that information whenever you're back?
Oh, you mean like, wait, say that again?
You said that you were going to present this
right
before, like, providing additional information.
Right. So, what I was going to do is I was going to, what I will, what I'll do is I will create some instructions.
Okay.
This is actually almost the stat code thing is almost an ideal, representation, because stat codes live outside. They, even though they look like they're inside the record, they're actually kind of outside. And so this will actually works more efficiently than, this is one of those cases where it's not only simpler, but it works more efficiently than alternate ways of doing it. And frankly, needing to do mass stat code mapping is a, what I'll call it, it's a fairly common thing. And the whole problem with stat codes is you can't use them until everything's marked, and you can't have a process where marking everything is too cumbersome. So this is a good application for that.
I just want to try and maybe clarify what you were kind of asking. I think is that when you're setting up the mapping profile for the import that you're running for this, you map that field subfield that contains your stat code value to the statistical, when you're creating the mapping profile, it gives you the option to set a statistical code in the mapping profile.
Yeah. No.
You tell. Yeah. you tell it which.
You don't even have to map.
Yeah.
No. This is the step. If you're doing multiple,
yeah.
Then you need map.
Right. So like what you do is what I have on the screen, instead of having, I think I'm mapping an alternate identifier, it would just be the stat code instead. And that's if you put in the mark field. But if you, as everybody else was saying, if you're mapping them all the same one, yeah. Then you just set the stat code and then you get to use this super simple structure where, you know, your mark record is only going to have one field in it. I mean, that's the beauty of it. It's like, you don't need you don't have an 08, there's no 245, all that other kind of stuff. It's just reading it. Yeah. No, this is really easy.
And I hope everyone can appreciate that. I'm going to say this. Kyle just gave me an assignment in this presentation to move some of the posting logic we have for holdings and items to do that in batch over from our migration tools tool set over to our the Folio data import tool set, which is a good idea anyway, but now I have to do it because he just said it's there. Thank you, Kyle.
So there's something else from online from the chat, and it was a comment, but I think there's a question in here too. So for multi-tenant where I work only on one tenant, rolling back to a backup is not my call to make nor something I can request. It's not a safety rail for me. So the question that I'm thinking of after reading this is it possible to do a backup on just say a location code?
Well, you mean like just, you mean to preserve the locations?
No, not necessarily, but like all the items within a location, like, I completely messed up my curriculum collection. Can I get a backup of just my curriculum collection from 10 a.m. yesterday?
Actually, I mean, I think that is possible, but
not really.
Well,
it would be like the entire thing.
The procedure for recovering this stuff is actually, it's really, really cumbersome.
Okay, gotcha.
If you definitely don't want to be requiring something like that on any kind of basis. Generally speaking, if you're going to be doing operations that you have any concerns about the safety for, what I'd do is I'd make copy out what you're going to target before you do, because that's going to be like way faster. Like if you had the entire curriculum correct, like if you had the entire curriculum collection and you... The thing with backups is everything is connected, and we have to kind of like pull out everything. There's transactions and all that kind of, I mean, it is really, really messy to do.
The short answer is talk to your hosting provider and ask them what's possible.
Yeah.
Because they're going to have different answers. Most likely we're self-hosted. Yeah. You know, your IT people are going to be like, yeah, we take snapshots every 15 minutes, and that's the granularity we can recover from. Hosting providers may be using a service that basically has managed databases that have basically real-time backups, point-in-time snapshot backups. But the process for recovering those is to restore the entire database to another cluster and then extract the data just like you would from your system. So it's better to do that ahead of time. Do that before you modify the data, extract the data you want to modify. Test your processes under one or two records, like Kyle said. That if you're doing a file of, you know, you're extracting a file of records and you're going to modify it, just do two, you know, copy the first two rows out of that file of UUIDs, and then just process them. That's always the best way to do it. And do increase that number until you're comfortable. I mean, it's about, for the most part, you're going to be safe. I trust yourself more than I think you want to. Yeah. In this case,
I mean, what you can do if you really don't trust yourself, and I think you should trust yourself, is after you've done your mass modification, harvest everything that you just modified. You know, so you have the before, you know, you have the before and after. It allows you to make comparisons, and then you can do whatever kind of whacked out analysis you want, and it will make it very easy to find. Like if you're, this is kind of like sending email, like right after you send the email, you realize that, you know, you didn't want to send it, that sort of thing. It will make it very easy to figure out if you somehow did something that you didn't intend, how to target what you did. But I think that people probably worry about this stuff much more than they should. It's like
you'll get paralyzed.
Right.
You lose out on the opportunity to gain efficiencies in your work and to do more, like to actually provide more services to your users and to, you know, to the staff in your library. If you're a systems librarian, and you're being asked to do these things, you lose opportunities by being too afraid to do these, but too afraid to make mistakes to do it in the first place. I guarantee you, you will mess something up.
And it will be funny.
It'll be funny, and you'll laugh about it in about 10 years once you're done crying about it. But the other thing is that these aren't the nuclear launch codes. So if it does mean staff time, and that's why starting small is good. That way you get comfortable with it, you get comfortable with the operations, and you learn. You know, you might make a mistake on those two records, and you're like, oh, I'm glad I didn't do that to all 500,000 records I was trying to modify. But don't be afraid to try these things out that Kyle's talking about, because they will make your lives tremendously easier.
There's a lot less than meets the eye here. I mean, that's kind of the whole point, is that like this is like it's really simple stuff. It's, you know, like when you, it doesn't require like knowledge in the normal sense of the word. It's like when you know the trick that makes it easy. Like, actually, this is a terrible audience to do that. Like if you work on cars or something like that, there's tricks to every vehicle that if you know the trick, it's really easy. And if you don't, then it is really awful. I'm trying to think of what would be a good, I don't know what librarian, they read books and stuff like that. I just, what I hear, but, and there's no trick to that. But do we have any other questions? All right. Well, thank you. And, you know, feel free to track me down if you get any other questions. All right, let's go. Let me see if I can see the chat. I can see the chat. All right, so I'm gonna jump to the latest. Okay. I'm trying to figure out which ones the one multi-tenant. Okay, Mark Rec. Okay, with the Mark record, help me say that it's the Mark. Oh. Right. Now, when for the Mark updates that I was talking about, I've been actually referring to Mark as a structure only, which is like if you were, it actually won't be a bib. It is just a container to put the information in, because like, let's suppose like we were using our stat code example, we might be setting stat codes on instances, holdings, or items for purposes here. Let's suppose that we were setting them on instances. Probably we're setting them on, I don't know, either it's going to be associated with properties on attached records like location. It might be something topical, you know, like call number based or something like that. But ultimately, what we're going to send is something that's not going to look like a normal MARC record. Like it's not going to look like a text mark. It's not going to have like title or anything like that. It's just going to have an identifier and what you want. Or if everything's getting sent the same, it's just going to have an identifier. So, and that's also what you do for the holdings. So like when you're updating the holdings record, you're targeting it on the basis of like HRID or UUID or something like that, or the item you're targeting on basis of, item ID, HRID, barcode, UUID. So it's not like a MARC record that you would update holdings on, or send to OCLC or another institution. It would not be the when you use the data import method, it's going to say, like, and you look at the results, it's going to say no record. That's that it will update records, but you won't actually see the record. You won't see the instance like you normally would, because you're not mapping it onto anything. So I think that, boy, probably the best way to do it is, like, if you're scared of it or something like that, go to the Bugfest or reference environments, and then try just dumping some stuff on there and see the behavior, and it will make sense. And never worry about hurting the Bugfest, and don't bother to clean up messes and stuff. That's why it exists. And then the other is the observation about having a way to roll back. The best way is to, if I'm going to do big scale changes, and I do them a lot, because what happens is whenever people are scared to do things, that's actually what tends to come my way. And so that's actually the first thing I do is I will get things in, like current state. And you'll say, well, what happens if you have these things in the state, you make the changes, and then you found out later that some of the changes were different than you intended? I mean, there's ways of resolving, there's ways of resolving differences in the records, and then only rolling back specific changes without the other ones, or in the case where there's actual destruction of something, there's ways of restoring. It's really not that bad. I don't even know. I know how often I do it, because it's like every day, literally. But this problem of not being able to recover things, it's just make copies of pay attention to what you had before, look at what you have after, and hold on to what you had before for a while, because sometimes it's not apparent what's going. Some things are not apparent immediately, and when I say not immediately, you'd be amazed how late some people can find things. But in all honesty, I've seen people like notice things wrong with their system that they've had for decades, happens all the time, or even funnier, that was mucked up in the system before the system that they had and they didn't know. I mean, this happens. There's a lot more cockroaches and bugs and stuff like that in people's data than they like to imagine. All right. But thank you for the questions and all that. But this stuff is fun.
I never use data import. I always do like the batch upload. And I was just so keen on whenever they actually allowed queries within.